Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
By the way, you can keep that going on our webpage where people are writing about this at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or on our Facebook page. But now a conversation about something we've kind of resisted all week, the disappearance of Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. Our thinking was the plane disappeared. There aren't any clear answers. CNN is obsessing. It's best to let the story play out and talk about it when we actually know something. But as the week has progressed, we realize that we do actually know something, and that is that we don't know anything. That fact in and of itself is worthy of a conversation at this point, because the central question, how is it that in this day and age, a modern plane loaded with communications equipment can just vanish? That question is endlessly fascinating. And even as we weren't putting it on the air on this show, we were realizing that I and most of my producers have been following it closely in other media. So here to tell us what we know, or at least define the parameters of what we don't know, is Patrick Smith for a few minutes. He's an airline pilot and author of Cockpit Confidential and the man behind the website, askthepilot.com. And if you want to call up real quick and ask the pilot yourself, 212-433-WNYC. Patrick Smith, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back.
Can you start by laying out those parameters, what we know, what we don't know, and what we know we don't know?
Well, first, I'd like to commend your sober, rational, and realistic approach to this whole thing. I wish everybody in the media were looking at it that way instead of creating a circus out of it. You know, really, the story has moved on from being a story about a plane crash, presumably, to a mystery story about a missing plane. It's not how did the plane crash, it's where is the plane, and we're watching it the way people watch celebrity murder trials.
Right.
And you know, the verdict, so to speak, now is when do they find the plane and where is it, at which point a lot of people are just going to stop paying attention, which is perverse, really, in a way, because the questions should be about what happened on board the airplane, not where is the plane.
And how do we prevent another human tragedy like this again?
Of course. And also, part of all this, another thing about all this hysteria that irks me a little is that it undermines the fact that commercial aviation worldwide right now is as safe as it has ever been. Last year was the safest year in the entire history of civil aviation. And we've done such a good job, I think, at engineering away what were once the most common and expected causes of accidents that the ones we're left with, you know, tend to be kind of mysterious like this. And the fact is that there are
true.
Always...
And I personally know enough about statistics at this point that I get more nervous in a car than I do in a plane. And
you
I think
should.
That's the opposite of most people. But the big question that most of our listeners who've posted questions for you on Facebook are asking is why this plane was ever out of communication to begin with. In this day and age, aren't planes basically in constant contact involuntarily?
Well, they are. I mean, the crew is always in contact with air traffic control, with company staff on the ground. The airplane sends out automatic messages. You've got satellite communications technology, data link, we call it, all these different pieces of equipment in a cockpit. But all of that stuff only works if it's powered. I mean, to make an analogy, you know, we're so we take for granted the immediacy and the connectivity of everything. You know, we're sitting there at our computers, you know, online, and then the world is just literally there at your fingertips. But only until somebody comes up to the back of your computer and pulls the power out and unplugs you. You know, in the end, in a sense, it's ultimately about electricity. And you have an airplane that may have suffered some catastrophic or cascading power failure that rendered all of that fancy equipment not working. We don't know that, but it kind of goes. The story seems to be moving along that line. And whether the equipment was depowered on purpose through some foul play, hijacking, a rogue crew scenario. We don't know. Or was it something strictly technical, some sort of bizarre malfunction?
And I think Linda has a question from Katona along those lines. Linda, you're on WNYC.
Hi there. Yes. So one of my questions was, you sort of addressed it, is it possible that somebody actually got into the cockpit and disabled a transponder? Two, they now know that this aircraft was in contact with satellites or something for several hours. Is it possible that this aircraft managed to land on the water and stay afloat for several hours before sinking? What do you think?
That's unlikely, but it is conceivable. And that applies to all of the different scenarios that people are coming up with. And meanwhile, you use the word transponder. You know, that's a word that the media keeps throwing out there. People don't really understand what that means. I mean, the vernacular of commercial aviation is confusing, and in attempts to simplify these technological terms for the layperson, you know, things get dumbed down, and there's it causes people to kind of grab these terms and run with them in maybe in ways they shouldn't be. I mean, a transponder, what is that? Well, it's different things. There are different sub-modes of the transponder. And a transponder is only useful in areas of traditional air traffic control radar coverage. And contrary to what most people understand, most of the world, actually, is not covered by air traffic control radar, including the oceans. So the transponder is only relevant to a certain point in this conversation.
I see. And yet Daniel on Facebook asks, why are jet transponders able to be turned off? There must be some technical or safety reason, he writes, for this, but I haven't heard it addressed.
Well, it's addressed in my blog post on askthepilot.com. I specifically answer that if anybody wants to click over and read that. Basically, there are very few components, really, in an aircraft that you can't turn off, that are always hot-wired to be on. And that's because of, in case a unit malfunctions or you know, even unlikely as it is, catches fire. Or usually there are two transponders on a modern commercial aircraft, and sometimes we have to switch from one to the other because they might be sending out erroneous data or might fail completely, and so the other one is there as a backup. You always need to be able to switch one off.
If there was a hijacking, how is it that there was no communication whatsoever? Why aren't there any terrorists bragging about it? Does that work very much against the hijack, crash this on purpose theory?
Somewhat. But, you know, Brian, you go back over the whole long history of air piracy, which did not start at September 11th, 2001. You know, you go back through the 70s, through the 60s. People would hijack airplanes for different reasons, and there were different, blueprints for hijackings, different motives. It's hard to say one way or the other. I mean, it certainly could have been a hijacking. It also could have been a rogue crew member scenario where one of the pilots, for some who knows what reason, you know, took over the airplane and flew it out to sea somewhere. That's not likely. I don't like going in that direction, though people keep bringing it up, because there's no evidence really to suggest that. There's simply no real evidence to suggest anything, and I think to a degree, that's inspiring people to come up with these, you know, more and more
absolutely
fringe theories. You know, the plane is in North Korea, it's in Sudan. I mean, come
right,
on.
Hijacked by aliens. But there was also this story that broke yesterday that the plane may have flown for 4 hours and even in almost 90 degrees, a different direction. But that's been debunked, hasn't it?
No, not necessarily. And that's the big question. That's the million-dollar question right now. We need to figure out, yes or no, did the airplane continue on after the point at which contact was lost? Until we know that for sure, definitively, we don't really know which way to go with this and which theories to rule out. And we're getting mixed messages about that. And I think that comes from the fact that you have these different investigative entities, different nationalities, different languages. Some of the countries involved don't necessarily get along with each other, and their messages are getting filtered through the media, and they come out to us on the other end, and they may or may not resemble what's really being said back on the scene, wherever exactly the scene is. So there's that aspect, and then you have the vernacular of aviation with terms like transponder and radar that are getting kind of dumbed down, and so It's not what you're hearing in the news isn't necessarily what's at hand, what's being said.
All right, a short course in what we know we don't know and what we don't know we don't know about the missing Malaysian airlines plane from Patrick Smith, pilot and author of Cockpit Confidential and the man behind the website AskThePilot.com. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thank you.
Brian Lehren, WNYC. And coming up after the break, we will attempt to set the world record for most digits of pi recited by callers to a public radio talk show. Stay with us.